Manner of Speaking, a monthly podcast on the spoken word, episode number 79, August 2024. Come From Away, a conversation with Joel Goldies. Hello, Paul Meyer here. Just finished my July masterclass series. I offered Dialects of the British Isles, always a favourite, and Coaching Accent Modification. My thanks to all the participants in June and July for your hard work and great questions. You made it a very rewarding summer for me. I hope to offer further masterclasses later in the year if my coaching workload permits. So be sure to watch the Zoom Masterclasses with Paul page on paulmeyer.com. You'll find it under the Coaching tab on the menu bar. Now, guess that accent. Last time I played this clip from the Idea Archive and challenged you to say where on the planet the speaker grew up.
When I pick up Shakespeare, I know sometimes it's a little bit confusing sometimes, but it's like gold. When you finally like get it and click it, it's like, oh my God, like how the hell did he say that and put that so beautifully? I mean, if it's just like talking about how gorgeous, say, Juliet is, how she says how boundless her love is for Romeo. You know, anything else, and I know there's other great writers too, but anything else just seems to pale in comparison.
I'm sure you placed the speaker in North America, but were you able to narrow it down to Rhode Island? If so, I'm very impressed. It was Ideas Rhode Island 1. For the full recording and all the documentation, go to Accents and Dialects on the menu tab of dialectsarchive.com, then North America, then United States, then drill down to Rhode Island. I chose that sample because it was contributed by last month's podcast guest, Barry Krynick. Thanks again, Barry. Lots of great listener comments on our chat about the transatlantic accent, by the way. Now, this month's challenge. Where did this speaker spend his formative years?
So I had this woman call me one day, and the phone rang, and I didn't recognize the number, but anyway, I picked it up. But this woman said, Mr. Oh. So I certainly could understand like where she was part of. She said that, do you have your computer on? And I said that, yeah, as a matter of fact, it's running, right? She said that, you have a problem with your Windows.
What's your guess? Get the answer next time. And if you missed out on contributing to IDEA during our recent fundraising campaign, don't worry. The Support IDEA page is always open. dialectsarchive.com/support-idea. Many thanks to all who supported our free, unfunded archive during the campaign. As you've heard me say before, if you aren't listening to me on paulmeyer.com, switch over now. Select In a Manner of Speaking from the Other Services menu tab, then click episode number 79. You'll find lots of details about our guest, audio, video, clips of everything we discussed today, and more. You won't find this on any other podcast channel. My guest this month is Joel Goldies, that's G-O-L-D-E-S, a leading colleague of mine in the dialect coaching profession and one of IDEA's great editors. Welcome, Joel, to In a Manner of Speaking.
Thanks very much. Great to be here, Paul.
You had a dream gig, Joel. 12 actors playing 70 or more characters in a smorgasbord of accents and dialects. Dialect coach's dream. You worked with the show for 7 years, from its inception to its triumphant Tony Award-winning Broadway run and beyond. We are talking about Come From Away. I'm so jealous.
Don't be jealous, Paul.
It's a dream gig, as I said. Explain the title of the show, first of all.
Certainly, it's the term that Newfoundlanders use to describe anyone that's come to Newfoundland from someone else. They call them come from aways.
So you and I are both come from aways.
Indeed. The amazing news is, I'm not entirely sure I should talk about this because it's not yet completely set in stone, but I'll be a come from away in Gander in August if all goes well.
I was wondering about that. You're going to do a production of the show there?
Well, it's in its second summer there. It was very popular last summer once the amateur rights were released. So popular that they decided to remount it this summer for a longer run. The producer, Michael Rubinoff, who's actually the creative producer, he came up with the idea and pitched it to several people before David Hein and Irene Sankoff took him up on it and headed to Gander for the 10th anniversary of 9/11, the attacks on the World Trade Center, to record a bunch of folks who were there, both come from a ways and folks from Gander and the surrounding towns. Mm-hmm. I'm also fortunate to be working on the Canadian Remount, which will open and play for a month in the national capital, Ottawa, featuring one of the creators, Irene Sankoff, as Bonnie, the SPCA lady.
Yes.
And then the show will head back to Toronto to the Royal Alexandria Theatre for what I believe is an open-ended run.
Sounds great. Take us through the story of Come From Away. Actually, you know, it occurred to me that it's a very nice idiom for outsiders, a metaphor for what we dialect coaches do. It's, as you said, how the folks of Newfoundland refer to anyone not born and bred there. So take us through the story.
Well, it opens with the cast of all playing Newfoundlanders at that point, singing about how unique a place it is, set on the northeast tip of North America. And there's a giant airport there, which used to be used for refueling. Planes couldn't make it across the Atlantic and then down into North America without stopping to refuel. And then it sat fairly abandoned for years and years. And on September 11th, when the US airspace was closed, 38 jet planes carrying nearly 7,000 passengers were directed to land there instead of continuing across Canada and into the US. They were mostly bound for the US.
Yes.
So those passengers disembarked, and Gander itself, which is where the airport is located, is a town of only about 9,000 people. So the folks from Gander and the surrounding towns took people in, made temporary shelters for them in churches and schools, and wherever they could find space, fed them. They were held on the planes for hours. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it gets a bit emotional.
Yeah, it's an emotional story.
Paul, I tell people that, you know, I saw the show probably 30 times before I stopped being moved by it at every viewing. I started with it in La Jolla Playhouse, at La Jolla Playhouse in Southern California, and thought I would only work with it there.
Yeah.
And it was a co-production with Seattle Repertory. And once the show went into rehearsal in Seattle, they invited me up for a weekend, and we continued to work on the show. And while I was there, the Broadway engagement was announced with further previews in Washington, D.C. and Toronto. And then they decided to do two shows at the hockey rink in Gander, because there's no suitable theatrical venue. So they took the whole cast and the band and some of the crew, unfortunately without me, to Gander itself to perform the show there. So to go back to the story of the show,
yeah,
folks were held on the plane for hours, 28 hours, I think, is the title of one of our songs in the show. It's astonishing when they finally arrived in the terminal building, which they say is a relic of the 1960s, with, I believe, the first escalator to be built in the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. They were greeted with food that the people had prepared for them. One of the characters says they must never have slept, because the planes were held on the runway, packed together all night. And when people went inside, there was all kinds of food for them.
Amazing. When was U.S. airspace opened up? And so how long were those stranded passengers, 7,000 or more stranded passengers, how long were they guests of the Gander folk?
They were in Gander and the surrounding towns for 5 days.
Oh, my.
So we may all remember that 9/11 was a beautiful Tuesday, sunny day in New York and in Newfoundland. And then, spoiler alert, by Saturday, most of the planes were allowed to take off again.
Okay. And that's the story of the show, the hospitality that the Gander folk extended to the 7,000 stranded passengers. What a fantastic story to tell.
Indeed.
In a musical form.
Yes, not the most likely subject for a musical. The subject of, what happened as a result of 9/11. The producers, the Junkyard Dogs, two of whom are in Seattle and two of whom are in New York City, they were fond of saying when we opened that they had no stars, a title which was hard to recall, and it set on 9/11. So it was a kind of a triple threat. It won the Tony for Best Direction and was nominated for 7 Tonys in total.
I was about to say this is going to be the crowning achievement of your career, but you're a young man and you've got lots more to come.
There.
Let's listen to a little clip that you put together.
On the northeast tip of North America is a town called Gander.
September 11th, 2001.
Over 200 planes getting diverted.
Even with all the hotels in town, we've got no room.
With thousands of passengers arriving at any minute, the town is asking for help with, well, anything you can do.
Thank you for shopping at Walmart. Would you like to come back to my house for a shower?
Hello? Yes, it's me.
Dad, I'm okay.
We honor what was lost, but we also commemorate what we found.
Gosh, I wish I'd seen the show.
Well, you still can on Apple TV if you like.
I would love to have seen it on Broadway. So what are we hearing? We're hearing lots of Newfoundland, as the Brits would say, Newfoundland, as North Americans would say.
Well, Americans tend to say it's tricky for me to remember. Newfoundland, Americans say. One Newfoundlander in the Broadway company, she taught us that in school, the kids are instructed to say, understand Newfoundland, which both have third syllable stress, and they both have that ah sound for the land and stand. Or, as an alternative mnemonic device, they're taught to say the full name of the province, which is Newfoundland and Labrador. And Labrador comes from a Spanish word for farmer or laborer, and the accent is again on the third syllable of both.
Newfoundland. Isn't it a wonderful accent? So surprising. Oh,
so surprising. And that the real danger that we found in La Jolla, and that's a danger for actors playing the roles for the first time to this day, is to be drawn too much into an Irish accent. So we deliberately, of course, some of the backgrounds of Newfoundlanders are Irish, Scottish. There's a mainland Canadian influence. There's a bit of French involved. There are people that I've met from Newfoundland who you would swear were from Ireland.
We have a few Newfoundland clips, samples on IDEA, as you may know.
Right.
And the first thing that everyone is struck by is, my God, they sound Irish. And then you look at the globe and you think, well, it's not so far from Ireland, actually.
No.
Which explains why it was a refueling stop on the on the journey down to New York or wherever.
Right, right. So it was difficult for the actors not to be pulled too strongly toward an Irish accent. And a conscious decision was made with myself and the rest of the creative staff that none of the accents should be very strong in the show, so that the audience can absorb it all very quickly. It happens in 100 minutes. There's no intermission. Sometimes characters change their accent, and that's the only clue that you get that they're a different character. There may not be a costume change. There sometimes is, but for quick, small characters, there isn't. So there are two very small characters who have quite strong accents, a Texan and a New Yorker, a passenger on one of the planes. And we also rejected lots of other accents because they're too close in sound for a wide audience to an Irish accent or to a Newfoundland accent. Mm-hmm. So we rejected Chicago. We rejected Boston. You know, this is the thing I say, as I'm sure you say too, when you coach a show, the most important thing is that the characters can be easily understood. So if we have to make accommodation through diminishing the strength of the accent, by all means, let's do it.
I'm going to quarrel with you on that. I often am asked by producers and directors. I want it mild so that people will understand. Well, I think understanding is all to do with the acting. If the acting isn't strong, we won't understand it. But you can, I've found that one can do quite strong accents. And if you're communicating your message clearly as an actor, then you tune into the most difficult accents, no?
Absolutely, I completely agree with you.
It's a fear thing. The same reason that the Globe Theatre resisted the idea of doing Shakespeare in original pronunciation for so long. Oh, they won't understand it. Well, it's suddenly a dead easy accent. It's so easy. People are afraid of accents sometimes. So I think in our profession, we have to deal with that, don't we? Yeah. This will be so interesting to our listeners who aren't in the business, and most of our listeners aren't in the business. But they all tell me how fascinating it is to hear these details. What a great story. Tragic story, of course, but revealing to the best of humanity. September 11th, 2001. Now let's talk about The Woman King, starring Viola Davis. What a fascinating story that film tells. An all-female warrior unit that protected the West African kingdom of Dahomey during the 17th to 19th centuries. I envy you that gig too. I bet you have lots of stories.
I do. It was an incredible trip. It's an astonishing place. Have you been, Paul?
I have not.
I hadn't either. I can't wait to go back. It's life-changing, I have to say. The attitude that people have about life is quite extraordinary. There's a real sense of protecting the family, of living as a community, I found, and preserving the natural world. I got to visit amazing game reserves and national parks whenever I could. I got to work with an amazing international cast. I particularly loved working with the South African actors that we had in the show. We had a great Nigerian actor. And of course, there's the headliner, Viola Davis, with whom I've worked twice on set now. And I've prepared her for three different shows. She's, without a doubt, my most favorite client ever. If she would just consent to doing some accent for which she needed a coach for every role, I'd be happy to work with her exclusively for the rest of my career.
Wow, what a tribute.
She's deeply professional. She's educated at Juilliard, so she knows phonetics, which makes things easier.
Less than 1% of our clients know IP.
Yeah, I use 5%, but you're probably right. It's probably much more like 1%. She's great with getting an accent down and integrating it as part of the character. And she keeps a great sense of humor about her work. I tell a story of one day when we were shooting outside a place called Somerset, which is to the, oh gosh, I don't know, the north of Cape Town, the north and the east. So it was about a 45-minute or an hour drive every day. She had a full day of stunt work to do, but she was only doing one or two words all day. So I didn't have a great amount to work on with her. And I would get to set, and over 500 meters to our right would be zebra and wildebeest and springbok enjoying the shade. And she'd say as we walked to set, I want to have some laughs today. So she knows that it's a serious business. She knows to give it her full attention and all her efforts when needed, but that it doesn't always have to be deadly serious. And that's so refreshing.
Nice. I'm pretty sure that no historical linguist has tried to reconstruct the dialects and languages that would have been spoken in Dahomey in the early 19th century. Dahomey's approximately contained within present-day Benin. So how did you approach this? Did you use today's West African accents of English? I mean, the film is set before the French colonized that part of the world. So I'm guessing that any English spoken at the time would have sounded very different from today. So what languages would the film's characters have spoken in reality?
Well, I appreciate you doing your homework. That's exactly my struggle. Thank you, Paul. The issue really is that there's an accent called Fon, F-O-N, which is pronounced with an ng at the end, as we might spell it with an N-G. We're dealing with a convention in which residents of Dahomey in the 19th century.
I'm mispronouncing the country.
That's all right. They would not have spoken English to each other. So there's a convention that we play in film and TV that people speak in an accent of English. Well, it became a rather large area of contention in production.
I bet.
My initial idea was to try to isolate out French sounds, as you say, because they were defeated by the French rather horribly, I think in the 1870s. So previous to French colonization, their influences would have been, if they were exposed to outsiders, which the members of this group of female warriors were not. They were isolated within the walls of the palace. So my notion was that the king and members of the court might have slight English sounds, small handful of English sounds in their accents, but that we would try to characterize a sound that's Fong or Fong Bei. I was able to find a few residents of Benin who spoke Fong, tried to isolate out the French sounds. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, because no one knows what this accent sounded like 200 years ago, I thought I would add in a sound or two, which one of these Fong speakers used in his English. And I thought, let's put that in slightly more predominantly to show that the accent has evolved away from that mm-hmm. in a present-day Fong speaker. Now, most residents of Benin speak French as their second language. So many people that I spoke to, and in fact, we used two language consultants on the film who were fantastic. Their accents were both going toward French mm-hmm. In English.
Peeling back the onion to pre-French colonization was your challenge, right?
Exactly. And then the production decided that it was too hard to understand. So I started to moderate things. And we began shooting in Hlulhlwe, or at a game reserve outside Hlulhlwe, which is Hlulhwe, north of Durban, on the Eastern Cape, as they call it. And there was very little dialogue shot there. So I kind of thought, well, things are going great. I was kind of felt like I was getting a pass on the accent. Once we got to Cape Town and started to record some dialogue, I was called into meetings with producers and told that the studio was unhappy, that the accent was too strong for Americans to understand.
Same old story.
Same old story that we always hear, right? So I started to make some accommodation toward that. Then I got some pushback that the accent needed to be a Nigerian accent. And that was the end of the story. Now, that would all be well and good. But in fact, one of the tribes that turned into modern day Nigeria, the Oyo, were characters in the show. And they are, unfortunately, the enemy tribe in our story. So I was being told that the accent needed to be that of the enemy tribe. So in an exclusive that you're getting, as I've never told this, there are very noticeable attributes of several Nigerian accents, and I decided not to include those. So I taught a sort of watered-down version of the accent of the Oyo, the language of the Oyo, to the cast. And that's what went into the show. And then I sat with bated breath for months and months. We did some ADR on the show, which is when actors go into a studio and re-record certain lines for which the accent has drifted, or more commonly, when there's a noise over a line. And we did some ADR, and then I waited and...
Automatic dialogue replacement for the uninitiated, right?
Thank you, automated dialogue replacement, right? A very useful tool, which is quite expensive, so is often not used by producers. But when you hear accents in a show, little side note, that go off target, there's probably been no ADR done for accent on that show. Because if they had a coach, that coach could have reviewed the show before the audio was finalized, And then they could have done ADR sessions to correct those little things.
Yeah.
So that's a privilege which I've had a few times, which is phenomenal. So in any case, I waited to the, they call it a friends and family preview of the show. And amazingly, only one actor's accent stuck out as being particularly Nigerian to me. I was astonished, quite frankly. I did not have any idea how it was going to turn out. And then the show premiered in September. It premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival and got great notices. Then it opened to fairly warm reviews critically, and I kept looking at every review to see if the accents were mentioned, and none of them mentioned the accents. I thought, oh, maybe the Nigerians are going to pick up on this. So I checked the Nigerian press, and in fact, they loved the fact that the Oyo were included in the show and that one of their great Nigerian actors played a key role.
It's ironic, isn't it, that our aspiration as dialect coaches should be for our work to go unnoticed.
Completely. Completely. And when I'm not mentioned in a review or the accents aren't mentioned in a review, I consider that a great review.
And I often tell actors that if you're complimented on your accent, you probably did it wrong.
Oh, that's interesting.
Huh. It shouldn't be foregrounded. In other words, we should listen to some of the woman king, shouldn't we? So did you want to set this one up?
So this is Viola Davis giving a speech to inspire her troops the night before a huge battle.
For 90 years, Dahomey has lived under the thumb of the Oyo. When it rains, our ancestors weep for the pain we have felt in the dark hulls of ships bound for distant shores. When the wind blows, our ancestors push us to march into battle against those who enslave us. When it thunders, our ancestors demand we rip the shackles of doubt from our minds and fight with courage. We fight not just for today, but for the future. We are the spear of victory. We are the blade of freedom. We are Dahomey.
Oh, congratulations on that.
Thanks. It's quite exciting, isn't it?
It's very exciting. Very exciting.
I don't mean to be immodest to say that, but with the music and the dance that's cut in, this is from the trailer, but it's fairly accurately playing what plays in the movie. The night before this speech was shot, Viola was given a rewritten version of the speech. So her work was really line memorization initially. So she felt she had a handle on it, but just barely. So we had a set with probably 200 background artists that day. We had a huge crew. We were outdoors at night. As they say, they built this castle courtyard somewhere outside of Cape Town where we shot many times, Somerset West. And Viola said to me, in front of the whole set, she said, because she was worried about the lines, she said to me, "Don't come in on me, Joel." She said, "I don't want any acting notes on this." And, you know, she's very good about sometimes asking me for acting notes, which is not what I'm there to do. You know, I'm there as a dialect coach. But, you know, if an actor asks for an acting note, I'm happy to give one. And I've done it with her a few times when she's asked. In fact, I got to direct her in a couple of scenes in The First Lady, which we had shot the previous summer, but that's a bit of another story.
What a privilege.
Oh, it was indeed. I couldn't believe my good fortune when she asked me to do it.
A measure of the trust she reposed in you, obviously.
Right. Thank you very much. Right. Thank you. So she said, "Don't come in front of the whole set. Don't come in on me, Joel. I don't want any acting notes," which was, you know, kind of embarrassing. And yeah. She did a take. And she said, "Joel, come here." She called me in for an acting note. She said, "Should I get bigger?" And I don't know if you noticed, maybe if people replay the clip, they'll notice near the end that her voice goes just below to where it would break. Well, in this first take, her voice broke. And she said, "Should I go bigger?" And I said, "Listen, my acting coach, Robert Cohen, with whom I worked at UC Irvine, I said, he told us as actors never to break the voice at the top because it shows the audience the height of your power. You have nothing left in reserve or as a threat.
Yeah,
so she said,
and don't play the end at the beginning.
Right, absolutely. And don't show everything that you've got. Reserve some power. So she said, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And I went off and we rolled on the second take. And that, I believe, is the take that we just heard that was used in the movie.
It's got your name on it. Now, the film was controversial in some ways. It attempted a nuanced depiction of West African slavery. The female regiment. How do you pronounce what that regiment's called? The
Sorry. Oh, boy, did we go back and forth on that, Paul.
Agodjie. A-G-O-D-J-I-E. How should one pronounce that?
So, to my memory, it should be in Fong. Agodjie. Agodjie. We're very tempted as Westerners to throw a stress in, but it should not have a stress. Agodjie.
I noticed that she's doing very syllable-timed work instead of stress time.
Exactly, know. Right.
So Agodjie, okay.
Right.
So the female regiment, the Agodjie, I've read in my little bit of research, in addition to protecting the kingdom, also captured fellow Africans and sold them to transatlantic slave traders. Were your dialect choices inflected by your awareness of this potential controversy? Did you use dialect to help the audience sort out the goodies from the baddies, for example? It's a landmine of a story, isn't it?
Well, I wanted to. That was my plan. So I went in tailoring the captured slaves with sounds of their original languages.
Hmm.
And that got moderated toward the middle once the pronouncement came down about which accent to use.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Portuguese slave traders, and my notion, which is partly affected in the show, is that the Portuguese would not have spoken English, so we wouldn't hear a Portuguese accent of English. What we would hear in our convoluted creation of Fong-based English is Portuguese-inflected Fong. As opposed to English-inflected Portuguese.
I bet my listeners have no idea of the complexities of what we go through in pre-production here.
Yes. Oh, well, and honestly, it was during production because I had pushback from members of the team. They did not want to do Fong Bay-inflected Portuguese. So, as I say, it's only heard partially in the film. I also had this scale that the king and members of his court would have maybe some English and French and Portuguese sounds in their accents, and that would descend. The strength of those sounds would descend as we got down to the Agodjie, who would be a purely Fongbei-based accent. Mm. So the careful listener would hear some differences, and those could be accounted for with the sort of the spectrum, which I had planned, which unfortunately had to go by the wayside when the powers that be stepped in and said, no, it needs to be one thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's essentially what it was, with the exception of the Portuguese language speakers, who, by the way, have several scenes in the Portuguese language. So we had a Portuguese language teacher on set, and that's mm-hmm. a very difficult language to learn to speak. Mm-hmm. So kudos to those actors and to that teacher.
Wow. And none of them were Portuguese speakers initially?
No, unfortunately not.
Ooh, what a challenge to pass for a native speaker of a language that you don't have in your repertoire. Switching topics here, but not really, perhaps. You're very interested in neurogenesis and language acquisition. And of course, this applies to dialects too, and any new skill, I guess. So, the brain growing new neural pathways when it learns a new dialect or language. So what does your research tell you about that?
What I've learned is that we're all developing new neurons. The number varies from 600 to maybe 12 or 1400 a day. And it turns out that language acquisition is one of the best ways to grow them. And I believe and have read that learning a new accent works the same way. So what I found, and this is something that my voice and speech professor at UC Irvine, Dudley Knight, used to say in class, one does not have to repeat new sounds out loud very many times for the brain to be able to hear them. So that's what it's all about. It's about learning to make the new sounds. And I use the vowel chart, which, you know, we all use. There's a version of it on my website, which explains how it works. But when a client can learn that a sound is changed, a vowel sound is changed depending upon where they put their mouth and where they put their tongue, to a lesser extent, opening and closing the jaw and rounding or unrounding the lips, they can start to make that sound. And then through neurogenesis, or the formation of new neural pathways, their brain will start to hear it for them. So Dudley used to say, the brain does the hearing for us. The brain filters the sounds through the sounds of our original accent or language. But once we can teach the brain to recognize new sounds through training the mouth to make them, then the new sounds can start to be heard. Many times I've had a client come back to me for a second session and say, oh, I was hearing all these schwa sounds, or word reductions like cream and sugar that I'd never noticed before. How frequently many Americans use that schwa sound or weak forms of words, and that I should be doing that as well. So we can't imitate what we can't hear. So once someone can be shown how to make a new sound and their brain starts to allow them to hear it, then they can start to imitate more accurately. And then the accent work goes much more quickly.
That's a salutary story and very encouraging, isn't it? We can stave off dementia, perhaps, by studying new languages or learning new dialects. That's a nice way to end our show here today, and encouraging all our listeners to do what you've done with those languages and what we do every day with our dialects and accents. Live longer, stay smarter, stave off dementia, learn a language, learn a dialect. Thanks for joining me, Joel, today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. I surely appreciate it. Thanks for asking, Paul.
And thanks to you for joining me, Paul Meyer, and my guest, Joel Goldies. Remember, for the extra information about him, clips from his work, and other relevant material, go to paulmeyer.com, choose In a Manner of Speaking from the Other Services tab on the menu bar, and click episode number 79. Don't forget to follow Paul Meyer Dialect Services on Facebook and me on X or Twitter at Dialect Paul. Email me with your comments and questions, paul@paulmeyer.com. They're always welcome. The audio clips in this episode were all used by permission or taken from YouTube and used under the copyright doctrine of fair use. Details on the podcast webpage. Next month, my guest is the renowned linguist David Crystal. He's an old friend of this podcast. This will be his sixth appearance. We'll be talking about his latest creation, an amazing website he's created called Trace That Place. The story and sound of place names on the road signs and railway stations of Britain. Type in any place name and hear David give you the history of that name and tell you how to pronounce it. Join David and me next time on In a Manner of Speaking.